Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, podcaster Harry Duran talks all about finding his voice.
I fly to Thailand. We climb up this hill is like elephant dung because they take elephants there up the hill. And there's a beautiful waterfall, and the waterfall's going over the cliff. And he's standing at a lookout point. And he's like, oh my God, you got to see the view from here. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And I step up onto the stream, and I hit a rock, and the rock is so slippery that I go up in the air, kind of like a weird Fred Flintstone moment. I land on my back, and I proceed to be carried over the edge of the falls.
Today on the show, my good friend and podcaster, Harry Duran, talks all about finding his voice. Stay close.
My name is Harry Duran, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to last week's episode with Victoria Lacoste. Victoria Lacoste. It's not been released yet, Harry, so you haven't missed anything. But okay. Does the name Victoria Lacoste mean anything to you?
Yes, having grown up in the 80s, then yeah. I definitely recognize that as the alligator on the preppy t-shirt.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And Victoria Lacoste is the granddaughter of the main Lacoste man. I can't think of her grandfather's name, but he was a tennis pro, and he won all sorts of tournaments in the late 20s and 30s. And he was actually, they called him the crocodile because he was like he would just jump out and just slam the ball down or whatever.
Rene Lacoste.
Oh, good for you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Well, they are, and they're from Switzerland, so it's French. Yeah, she speaks French. But anyway, it was so much fun to learn about her family. And, you know, usually I have comedians on the show, but I made an exception last week, and I'm making an exception this week, although you do make me laugh. So last week, I wanted to tell you, Victoria was talking about how she chose to be a filmmaker. And it is an interesting story because she is like an heiress, you know, to this Lacoste fortune. And she doesn't have to do anything.
It must be nice.
You know what I mean? For the rest of her life. Yeah. And so her whole family is into finance. They're all in like financiers. She has brothers that are triplets. Isn't that interesting?
As if her life wasn't interesting enough already.
I know. Her brothers are 24. She's 26. And her family totally supports her. Her parents are really on board. But I'm just saying, you know, telling somebody when you're a teenager, I'm going to be an artist. It's like, are you sure? Because you could live a nice life here in Geneva, you know, and have a lot of nice watches, I think. Anyway, yeah. So Victoria is super interesting. She lives in Paris, and, you know, again, it's amazing that we can do this, you know, mm-hmm. on Squadcast or a lot of other platforms. It's just fantastic. And, you know, I think it's been a year since the pandemic now, yeah. But boy, Harry, I'm so excited to talk to you today because you are really, boy, oh boy, you know a lot about podcasting. Well, you do, and it's interesting. You have a company called Podcast Junkies. You do a podcast by the same name, and basically the concept is, you know, talking to people about podcasting in a number of fields. So it could be anything from filmmaking to fishing to anything. There's so many podcasts. I always tell people to think about like a magazine rack, and now they're all podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the way you can consume it. And the beauty of it is that, and as your listeners already know, like it's theater of the mind because they're listening. They don't have to be in front of a screen. They can listen to it whenever it's convenient for them. So I'm sure some people immediately get your episodes downloaded and they listen story-worthy immediately. Others save it like a squirrel and say, okay, this is for my Saturday walk around the park. I've set aside some time. So I think the beauty of being able to consume it when you want to, I think that's what makes it really special. And then it's really intimate too, because you have a great mic, and people are consuming on earbuds and you're literally having that one-to-one connection with them, which I think is great.
Yeah. And so you talk with people in the podcasting field and it's really interesting. I listen every week. It's really in depth. I mean, I'm not saying that everybody wouldn't find it fascinating, but it's really podcasters who are listening, don't you think?
Yeah. What's interesting is I came from a corporate background, Christine. So I was like, if when people ask me how I started podcasting, it actually started with my interest in DJing. So I was, you know, created a mobile app because I love electronic music, house music. I grew up in Yonkers, New York, just outside New York City. So the birth of house music, the birth of hip hop, that was all present for me. And I learned how to DJ, would go to music festivals. And then I wanted to learn more about the DJs. So with a friend, we built a mobile app called Know Your DJ. And then I thought I was going to start a podcast. And many of your listeners can relate. I was a fan of Inside the Actor Studio. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I want to create that experience, but in the world of podcasting. So, you know, how James Lipton would, you know, humanize these actors because he would get them to sort of let their hair down. And that's what I thought, that's what I wanted to do with Podcast Junk is like, I don't know these people and I don't know anyone in the space. So from day one, and we were talking a little bit about this in pre-show, it was just, I wanted to make sure I could see them and have a face-to-face connection. So I used a tool called Skype with eCam call recorder, and I was able to see them and have that hour-long connection with them. And then just slowly over time, I would go to podcasting conferences and they'd be like, hey, Harry, that was a great chat we had. And I was building up relationships. But, you know, I wasn't known in this space in 2014.
No, I know you weren't. And you're not the first person. Are you a lawyer? Is that what you're?
No, I was in mostly marketing. I worked at JP Morgan Chase and E-Trade. So not in finance, but I worked in the marketing departments there.
And you're not the first person who I know from the corporate world who gave it up, especially it seems to be lawyers, but also doctors. Like I just had on Bassem Youssef, and he is a heart surgeon, and now he's a comedian. So there you go. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's interesting. At the end of the day, a lot of people, no matter how much wealth they accrue or to what place they get in, you know, in terms of financially, it doesn't pay off if they want the attention of an audience. Or, you know, look at, you know, well, there's all sorts of examples, but I, for some reason, my head just went to Bill Cosby, who's like the most horrible person in the world and wouldn't just fucking go away. And he keeps trying to make these comebacks and keeps trying to get these audiences. And he did get a lot of audiences. And it's like, why, what it makes him so hungry for that approval is bizarre.
Mm. I think once you've had a taste of it, and it's also in terms of like why you're doing it. And even the most famous people in the world, they'll tell you like the last thing you want to do is become famous because it's like it changes your life forever. Yeah. And so I think sometimes people don't know. It's almost that be careful what you wish for.
For sure. For sure. Having a steady job is nice. Having income is nice. But yeah, to be recognized, I don't think would be fun at all. At all.
Yeah. And it's interesting what's happening in this space that, you know, we're in podcasting. There's some stuff happening with Clubhouse and all these apps where people are trying to build a personality. People have been doing it in TikTok. It's this wave of micro celebrities. So like within certain spaces, like in podcasting, there's people that like a lot of people know in the podcasting space. But if you go outside of podcasting, no one has any idea who the heck they
are. Right. No, I understand. That's funny you brought up Clubhouse because it's right here on my piece of paper. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Clubhouse. It's this new, you know, app that a lot of podcasters and other people are using. And I've asked my friend Ariel Nissenblatt, and you know Ariel. I've asked her.
Yes, very well. Yeah.
I asked her if she thought I should use it, and she said, I don't know. I don't think you'll be into it. So tell me about Clubhouse. I mean, real quick, by the way, Harry Durant brings forth the topic today, finding your voice. So we've already kind of talked about, you know, finding your voice, but I'm anxious to hear your actual story. And for me, finding my voice took till I was about 52.
I can relate.
No, I mean, I'm just telling you, it takes time, man.
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing, and you kind of have to also have a series of experiences in life, you know? If you don't go out and live a life, you have nothing to bring to the table, you know? You really have to have some intimate knowledge of what's going on in the whole world.
And something to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Which brings me to another point, but first I want to hear about Clubhouse. Yeah, tell me this.
So for the benefit of your listener, Clubhouse is an audio-only app which simulates the experience of listening in to like radio, for example. So when I first joined, I was given an invite by my friend Esprit Devora, and I sort of dabbled in it for a little bit, and this was late last year, I think. And then I was like, oh, I really don't get what's happening here. Revisited it like a month or two ago, connected my partner as well. She jumped on and we got sucked into like this rabbit hole because it reminded me of like old time radio where you could listen to people talk about topics that are of interest to you. You could pick the room you want to be in. And at one point we were in a room with like 1500 people and they were talking about like the election or race in America. And it was just fascinating. And that's not, you know, there's a bunch of other things, obviously, that the marketers are in there selling their services, but there's comedians in there testing out like live events where they're doing comedy sets. I've hit like talent shows where people just like come on stage, and the way that it's set up is you moderate a room, and this is all audio, mind you, so there's nothing to see. You just see people's profile icons. So if I'm a moderator, I could bring Christine onto my quote-unquote stage. So she now is co-moderating with me, and other people are listening in. And then you could see the people that Christine and I follow in that first tier, and then below that are just general audience. And so if people can raise their hand, if they want to ask a question, come on stage.
Yeah, see, I would get sucked really in. I think that sounds like so much fun. I don't know why Ariel told me I wouldn't. Well, she was saying that it's more for not necessarily people that podcast, but for people podcast. What was she talking about, man?
I think it's who stream a podcast live. Well, the other interesting aspect, so from a podcasting perspective, when people wanted to get started, you know, there was a bit of a barrier, like learn the microphone, like learn how to get book guests, interview guests, sure, find guests, sure, all that sort of rigmarole. But what's interesting is that then Anchor came around and starting a podcast became super easy. Anchor.fm. Which is purchased by Spotify, now owned by Spotify. And you could literally start a podcast. You don't have to pay because it's free hosting. So that's remove one barrier there. And now the quality of even earbuds are getting, you know, really good. So people love the fact that they could just start on their phone with Anchor and record podcast episodes.
Anchor is so rudimentary, dude. It is like, so to me, it's so clumsy. It's like, but you found here that, you know, like what is going on? I mean, why does it have to be? And then there's like big buttons. There's a yellow button and a green button and a red button. You don't be bad. You don't do. And it's just, I couldn't do it. I tried. I did one episode and it was, so then I did the episode in GarageBand and I uploaded it to.
I love how you anthropomorphize the buttons of,
yeah, thank
of Spotify.
You very much. Thank you.
Getting like sound effects. But what's interesting about Clubhouse now, technically, they don't make it easy to record, but podcasters know how to do that. You can plug your phone into like an USB cable. And so obviously the podcasters figure that out pretty quick. So if you notify people that you're going to record the room, you can do that. But the majority of them are not. You don't need a microphone because you're literally speaking to your phone. You're not on camera. And, you know, the room may or may not, you may only have like two or three people in the room. So from a literally just jumping on and checking out and starting a room and seeing if you can build an audience and build consistency, it's interesting.
I think it's really great. I think it's really great. I love it, especially for people who, you know, maybe their niche is super small. Maybe it's like a knitting club or people want to talk about fishing or people want to get together and talk about, you know, where should I go in the South Pacific?
The more specific, like, the better.
You know, yeah. Who knows about Paris? Exactly. Yeah, who knows about Paris? Tell me something. Where should I eat in Paris? I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Invite me on to something you're doing, and then I'll go from there.
And don't
blame
me later if you lose. Time magically disappears off your calendar.
Right. And you have another podcast that I find very interesting called Vertical Gardens.
Farming.
Which is, by the way, right on the right on the page in front of me, and no matter what, I still said farming. Nice.
You're thinking Grey Gardens.
Yeah, right. vertical gardens, and this is basically planting gardens vertically. Is this true?
Yeah, so it's really fascinating. So the actual agency that we own is called Fullcast. It's a done-for-you podcasting agency. We work with businesses for setup, audio production, and then the marketing. And so Podcast Junkies is the first one I did. Technically, the second podcast I did is a six-part series. I actually interviewed Ron Shusett, who is the co-creator of Alien, the co-writer of Alien, Total Recall, Minority Report. He lived in Venice, and I became friends with another friend of his named Robin Maxwell. She's written books, like 20 books, and we became friends because she wrote a book about Atlantis. This is a wild, like, if you think about the stories, I read a book about Atlantis, like the future, like the mythological civilization. I loved it so much. I sent her an email. I said, hey, can let me know when books 2 and 3 come out. She emailed me back. She's in her 70s. She lives over by Joshua Tree. And she's like, why don't we just call and speak on the phone? Like, I'm in my 70s. We started talking, became friends. She sent me the two and three as PDFs to let me proofread her like new books. Blown away. We started talking. She told me, so we became really good friends, which is really funny.
Fascinating.
Because I was just a fan of the book. And then Robin Maxwell is her name. She said, I'm friends with Ron Shusett. And I was like, I don't recognize his name. She's like, well, he co-created and co-wrote Alien, Minority Report, and Total Recall. And so long story short, he's got such a great, like, he's a great storyteller, right? So I managed to get to his house, and we captured, like, him telling the story of Alien, telling the story. Wow. It's called An Alien in Hollywood. So it's me and Robin interviewing him. At his home, and I was just like so starstruck, because I was like, I remember exactly where I was when I watched the movie Alien. I was in my aunt's house. I was like 9 years old. Well, it came out on TV, so I was born in 1970, so I was probably like 11 years old. But that movie's so scary,
yeah,
like
sure.
The first one.
Yeah.
And so to be speaking to the guy who co-wrote, you know, co-created the movie, you know, in his house was wild.
Yeah, and that probably hooked you.
Yeah, that did totally hooked me, and so got to tell his story. Unfortunately, he's a little not doing well health-wise. So just, again, the power of podcast to capture moments in time that you may not have an opportunity to capture. So that was interesting. So
I feel sorry for my daughter. She has like, 4,000 hours of me. I'll never leave.
And I appreciate the listener hanging on to this, the twists and turns of this conversation, because I know you asked me about the vertical farming podcast. So that's the third one. So as an agency at Fullcast, I'm tying these open loops together. I wondered out loud, could I create my own podcasting client? And because, you know, people pay us to produce shows. So I was like, well, what if you get maybe a sponsor? So I read a book called Abundance by an author named Peter Diamandis. And he talks about like future technologies. And one of the chapters was about vertical farming, nanotechnology, all these things that are going to happen in the future. So rabbit hole, vertical farming. This is interesting. This is a book by Dixon Despommier, written in the 90s, I think. And he talks about this idea of vertical farming. And his future was that in these tall skyscrapers, all this real estate, you could build crops that would grow vertically, and how it would be helpful for the food problems we face in the future. So I was like, oh, this is fascinating. And then I saw how much money was coming into the industry. And I was like, I could probably get a sponsor for the podcast as well. So I started interviewing founders and CEOs. This is something specifically I decided I was going to interview the founders and the CEOs of these companies, because I realized if people started to see who the previous guests were, they'd be like, oh, wow, these are like the who's who in the vertical farming industry. And so I picked those early names, started interviewing them. COVID hit. And so this is March of last year, and I had an interview coming up with a guy by the name of David Farquhar. He's the CEO of a company called IGS in Scotland. And I was like, do you still want to have this conversation? He's like, yeah. So we have it, and this is literally like third week of March. So I'm on Zoom. He's in his room, in his house somewhere. We have a great conversation. We hit it off completely. And it's the same format, because I've been doing this on Podcast Junkies. It's just a different topic. Rather than interview people about themselves, because that's sort of what I'm doing with Podcast Junkies, I interviewed these founders about themselves. So the entryway was like, oh, you have this vertical farming company, but then it segues into like, why? Like, how did you end up here? And I start going down that path. And they really like resonate, because it was like, oh, it's sort of like a familiarity of in terms of the conversation, and it's been like a fascinating journey. The payoff is that I actually secured a sponsor for that podcast that paid me to sponsor the first season before I even launched one episode.
How much?
$9,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really exciting, man. Now, do you vertically farm?
No, not yet. So the range of the industry is so crazy because it could be like companies like Plenty and Aero Farms and Bowery Farming who have like these mega buildings with like robots. And the beauty of vertical farming is it's all climate controlled. There's no pesticides because there's no bugs. And they're using hydroponic, aeroponic systems. And the freshness is crazy because they're not, you know, vegetables are not coming from California. Like they're literally coming from like one of these farms down the street. You could have the big ones, and then container farms, which are old shipping containers. They've been retrofitted now to be vertical farms as well. Again, climate control. There's apps to monitor all the stuff inside the vertical farm. So you're basically getting a perfectly grown like head of lettuce, and they can get cycles like 7 cycles in a season because there's no weather to worry about as well.
You know, they tried something like this in Arizona in this big bubble back in the 80s. Do you remember that?
I think so, yeah. But this is more specific. It was
called I'm just saying real quick. Yeah. It was called the Biodome or something that. And I went and visited that place. I was on a trip with a boyfriend. It was about 20 years ago. And we went to the Biodome and we took a tour and we walked around. And basically, it was like this. It's a huge structure that basically replicated each of the 7 climates or whatever it was. So this is the desert and this is the rainforest and stuff like that. And then they had like 4 or 5 people live in there, and then they were filming it. That was the idea. They live in this biodome for I think 2 years or something, and then they film it. And everything, it all failed. And why did it fail? Harry Duran.
I don't know why the biodome failed, but I think they were trying to replicate like an outdoor environment inside. So it was, so you would have everything open. So you'd have like a garden with dirt inside, and then they'd try to replicate the climate, but this is not what this is.
No, I know, but I just want to talk about this because it makes me laugh. What they didn't count on and what they forgot about was wind, and wind affected all those climates. So anyway, there's this relic in Arizona that you can pay a sum and go, or maybe it was in New Mexico. I don't even know. The point is, you know, when you're out in the West and you're like road tripping, there's not a lot to do. So you pretty much go into whatever is along the road. And that's either Elvis's museum or, you know,
or the whatever. World's ball of, largest ball of yarn.
Largest ball of twine. Yeah. So anyway, okay. But so what you're talking about, I think I've seen this in like maybe on 60 Minutes or something, where you see the side of a building and it's basically glass and the garden is a spiral going up very, very high, like maybe 10 or 20, no, 30 stories high. Is that right?
That's sort of like the futuristic version of it. That's not very practical. If you think the way these actually work is they have them in rows, because if you think about it, the robots need to be able to like go down a specific row, move a tray, and they use LED lights. So, and these LED lights are really efficient, and what's fascinating, Christine, is that they can replicate daytime and nighttime light. And there's a difference because the blue light that comes in at those times, because natural crops, they do things at night and they do things at dusk. And so they're replicating these different times of the day. They're changing the humidity in the room to replicate different conditions. And they do have fans to sort of simulate those environments. It's really fascinating.
It is like fascinating.
The level at which these things are now. And what was interesting is I started interviewing some of these founders. I interviewed a woman who, her crop is actually insects. She raises them indoors, and she's raising and cultivating insects as feed for livestock. So that's her crop. Another guy's growing mushrooms indoors.
So livestock would be, you mean just like chickens and stuff? Yeah, a chicken, cow live on ants.
No, it's more like chickens and anyone that feed off grubs. So they're basically using the indoor vertical farming techniques.
So she's like living in an ant colony. That's creepy, I think it's man. More like,
and they got funding for the company and everything. And so
there's a podcast about it. Right. And you can hear it every week, wherever you hear your podcast, all about insect farming.
And what's interesting about the podcast is also, as a marketer, I said, why am I going to call it a fancy name? I'm just going to call it what it is. So it's called Vertical Farming Podcast. And if you put those three words into Google, that show is number one on Google. Because it's like, why reinvent the wheel? And this is what I tell creators and podcasters, like, if you're gonna point someone to something, like, don't let them search for it. Like, when they see the name of your show, like, when you see story time, like, I think I know what's gonna happen here.
Say that one more time, because what did you call me?
No, I think when I see story time in a podcast,
who writes in story time?
No, I'm just saying, like, when people, in terms of people, like the podcast, like when they
but
see the name
of it.
But
would they write in story time or storytelling?
No, at least if you, as a listener, I'm just saying if you see the name of a show and it's called story time or story words.
Oh, I see. Well, okay. Because, you know, I don't do fairy tales over here. You know that, right? I just want to be clear.
Yet.
Hey, man. Yeah. I get the right sponsor. Anything could happen. I'm available. All right. Listen, that's all very interesting.
You could do story worthy magic hour.
And you know what's funny is you bring forth the topic today, finding your voice. And so you found your voice in vertical gardening or not. And we're going to hear about that in just a second. But before we do, I wanted to remind you guys that we are playing Story Smash every Friday night on Facebook and YouTube. It's live. It starts at 7 p.m. It is so funny. It's just crushing it. It's hilarious. People are commenting. There's a big chat going on. And, you know, everybody's at home, but everybody's so excited. Everybody's willing to play. There's never a dull moment. The show usually goes about an hour and 5 minutes. And so you guys check it out. You can go to storysmashshow.com to find it. And then you can also follow Story Smash on Instagram, where you can see some photos and stuff at Story Smash. Do that, will you? It's not hard. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Harry Duran. You heard him talking. Like we said, he's the host and creator of Podcast Junkies, which was born out of a genuine interest and curiosity for the growing league of podcast hosts. So you did make the show for podcast hosts.
I made the show for, you know what's interesting? I felt like I was scratching my own itch. Like, I wanted to learn about the podcasting world. And I just, whoever was interested in following that journey, they could follow me. And obviously, it's a lot of podcasters, because they would hear, like, our fellow peers in the space. It's almost like, you know, comedy time for comedians. And because, you know, it's a small group of people, and we all know each other, we want to support each other. So in those early days, I would have my friends on, and they would be excited to listen. And I would try to pull something out of them that they don't normally talk about in their own show. So I just wanted to make them more relatable as podcast hosts.
You've been very successful at that, for sure. And what's also interesting about Podcast Junkies is, like I said earlier, it features a wide range of authentic voices that are behind the microphone. So it's not just having people on like me who talk about storytelling or game shows, but you've got a variety of topics like business and finance, entrepreneurism, history, comedy, and just all kinds of stuff. And you guys can find Podcast Junkies at podcastjunkies.com. And you can also find Podcast Junkies on Twitter at podcast_junkies. All right. I'm anxious to hear your story. So folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for my friend, Harry Duran.
So when I think about this idea of finding my voice, I think about actually hearing voices. And I think about early days, my father used to play these vinyl records and sometimes cassettes, and it would be these inspirational tapes like Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich. Some of these like time-honored traditions of like early days of, I guess, of people who are in the entrepreneurial space. And unfortunately, like, I really didn't pay as much attention as I should have to them, because, you know, parents have the best interests at heart. And my father came from El Salvador. Like, he was an immigrant. I was born in El Salvador. So, you know, when you think about like American Dream and how he was smart enough somehow to like, study computers. This is late 70s, like 78. And I was like, how did you end up in computers? And he's like, oh, I saw it on the back of a magazine once, like a computer class, learned computers. Thankfully he did, because it sort of opened my world and how I learned about technology. Like, I remember, like, I had a Texas Instruments early on as my computer. I was always like dabbling. I would be the first one to try to put together like furniture. Like, my mind works like logically like that. And I think he just saw like the opportunities there and wanted something better. And his dream was like for me to go to college. I imagined some Ivy League school. Unfortunately for him, that didn't happen, because I worked at a bank It was called Manufacturers Hanover. This is dating myself now, in New York City, which was bought by Chemical Bank, which was bought by Chase Bank, which was merged with JP Morgan to become JP Morgan Chase. So I worked in their early days, and I got my job there, and it was the first time I got to wear a suit. So this is like 1992, and I'm like, well, I'm wearing a suit to work, so you know, naturally that means I've made it, right? So I was a teller in Manufacturers Hanover. I knew my stuff. I got promoted to like head teller and select cashier, where I would work with like high network folks. And then he said, okay, we're gonna have an exercise where you have to remember the client's name. And so I would write on a piece of paper like, you know, Christine from Acme Company, and I would see the paychecks, Acme Company. I'd be like, hey, Christine, how are you? You have a nice day? And my boss was like blown away. He's like, oh my God, like, how do you know their names? And I showed him the piece of paper, and he's like, so he promoted me to the front of the floor. And so now I was opening up accounts, and I was just like, you know, really good opportunity. And then he left, he went to go start like another pilot project. He took me with him. And then when you hit that like six-figure salary, like that was like the second voice. Like the first is like my father, and he was just like, hey, you know, this is what I want for you. But this guy now almost became like my corporate godfather, because he was always like looking out for me. He said, you know, six-figure salary, like you're in the top 10% of like all income earners. And you know, it's a kind of a big deal. Like, and I always felt like that I was just going to go up the corporate ladder, just keep climbing that ladder. I tried a couple of different positions working for him. I left at one point. So now I'm thinking, you know, what else is out there? A slight entrepreneurial bug. And around 99, the dot-com wave hit. And so everyone is like leaving, starting dot-com. I don't know if you remember pets.com. Like it got crazy, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. But third voice, my friend John, he had this idea for a Latino portal. And at the time I was like, anything with a dot-com is probably going to make money. So I literally quit my job, and I left my job at JP Morgan Chase, really six-figure job, well paying, and I cashed out my 401k to zero. And that's not the first time I did that, by the way, so stay tuned for that. So and the kicker is that I went to go take a job in quotes at this company. It was an unpaid position. And I was literally just trying to do it for like equity and just going for like the $1 million payout of a dot-com company. So the fact that I'm here telling you the story, you can probably guess what happened. it didn't work out as we had planned. And I had to go back sort of like into, you know, the corporate gigs again. So I started there. Thankfully, my corporate godfather came in again. He's like, okay, I got another job for you. Do you want to do this? In between there, I became a waiter. I went back to waiting tables. This is like in my 30s now. It was crazy. Like, because last time I was a waiter before then, I was like 17, yeah. 18. I was like, oh, good thing I never have to do that again. Ugh. But what's funny about taking that job in that 30s is I remembered how fun it was. Like that ecosystem of like people who have those jobs, worked midnight shift. Like I had so many memories of like really, really good times, because we would just stay up, you know, we'd work until like 1 a.m. then we'd go to the bar and then hang out till 3, sure. And you just connect with people at a different level.
And you laugh a lot.
You laugh a lot. It's just what, you know, what you would call salt of the earth people. And it was really, really nice experience for me. So got back, did that for a while, again, started getting promoted, but that entrepreneurial bug just kept kicking in. And then in 2001, this is right after 9/11, like I was in New York for 9/11. I lived in the Lower East Side. I lived in on 7th and A. I remember exactly like the building I lived in. I used to be able to look outside my window and see the Trade Center.
Wow.
And so I'd look out every day. And then on that morning, I would leave every morning at 8:45 in the morning, because it would take me 15 minutes to get to work. And I would use that time to check the weather report, so that as I take the train down, I need to whether to grab an umbrella or grab a coat. So obviously I turn on the TV, 8:45. The first plane had already hit.
Wow.
And I was like, oh man. So that's like a mini story within a story, because then I climbed to the roof, and then we were watching everything, fighter jets going like flying across New York City. It reminded me of that movie, Wolverines. Wow. The Russians attack, remember? That was like in my mind. So it was a very surreal.
Were there a bunch of people on the roof?
Yeah, all our neighbors came up. Some guy brought up a telescope. We could see like through the telescope, the towers on fire. And then nothing was happening. So then I would go back down like through the fire escape, go into my living room, watch it on TV, look outside the window. I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that I was watching something on TV that looked like a movie, but that I knew was real life. And so, you know, that was a surreal moment. And then eventually we go back up because you never thought for a moment that they're going to come down, right? Never, never, never.
Did you watch the second one hit?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Did you think there might be more than two?
Yeah. Yeah. Because people would come up and they'd be like, oh my God, we just heard on the radio, like the Pentagon has been hit. And then I'm just like, there's one flying over Pennsylvania. And like, we're all just like, what is going on? Like end of the world. Like your mind is like crazy. And then, I mean, the good thing about that is like, oh, and so something good to come out about it actually is New York felt like a small town neighborhood. You know, after that first week, you would talk to your neighbors and you'd be like, hey, neighbor, how you doing? Hi, nice to meet you. So all that happened, 9/11, and I didn't want to leave New York, but I got reconnected to a half-brother of mine who lived in Atlanta. And he's like, hey, you want to come down and help me? I work in construction. Like I'm in like IT, like he's like, I own a siding company and we're trying to build a masonry company. I was like, sure, why not? So like, I was like,
well, it really took you a while to find your voice. This is crazy. Go ahead.
So I go down there and he gets, I'm literally like on scaffolds with boots and like climbing like
hard hat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I should have been a little anxious because the deal actually got sealed in a Hooters restaurant. So that probably didn't bode well for how this was going to go. Fast forward, 2 years later, it didn't, you know what they say about working with family, like it didn't work out. And so, 34, I got my tail between my legs. I'm on a plane back to New York City to go live with my parents.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. The only thing I had in my hand was a ticket to Thailand that I had bought, a couple months ago, because I had met friends years ago from a long-term relation, you know, that had been friends with a long time. And he's like, oh, come out to Thailand. So thankfully I had that ticket. And so I was like, well, I don't have a job. And I fly to Thailand, 26 hours. I had to fly from like New York to Frankfurt to like Bangkok to a town called Koh Samui. And then I had to take a ferry for like an hour.
I've been to Koh Samui.
It's beautiful. Absolutely
it's crazy.
Gorgeous.
You have so a friend gorgeous. That lived there?
Yeah, yeah. His parents had a house on Koh Samui.
That's random. What did he do there?
I don't remember. Heiko was his name. We've fallen out of touch, but
long did you stay?
So he stayed about a week, but that first day he picked me up. I had to, like, on a scooter. I had to put my luggage on the back of a scooter. We get to his place, drop it off. He takes me hiking. We go on this trip and there's like we climb up this hill is like elephant dung because they take elephants there up the hill. And there's a beautiful waterfall. And the waterfall is going over the cliff, and he's standing at a lookout point, and he's like, oh my God, you got to see the view from here. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And I step onto the stream because there's a stream going right under my feet, and I hit a rock, and the rock is so slippery that I go up in the air, like kind of like a weird Fred Flintstone moment. I land on my back, and I proceed to be carried over the edge of the falls.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah, and it's happening.
You buried the lead. How big were the waterfalls?
It was, well, it looked like a stream if you would just look at it, but it was moving very relatively quickly. And because there was a big rock just underneath the water, I slipped on it. And so when I was on my back, I was just, because it was just so easy, it was carrying me like towards the edge of the fall. So I stuck my leg out so quick. And it was a boulder, like I can see the boulder on the left side at the bank. And my leg stopped me from going over. And my friend is staring at me, like his eyes, he's kind of pale, his eyes are as white as saucers. So he finally just grabs me, pulls me over to the side. And I probably wouldn't have died because it was like super jagged rocks. But like, I'm in Thailand, like there wouldn't have been no help coming from like,
yeah, this, you know, is not five, where you want to get hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So I was shaking the whole time. And then finally, like we make a day out of it, we make a week out of it, have a great time. I fly back to New York. And then, you know, it's one of those things you don't realize until like after the fact. I realized, you know, what a shame it would have been if I had died with my voice inside me.
Mm. Wow.
And I realized that, and I think about that moment like several times. And, you know, it's rare when you have a moment when you can kind of see your life flash before your eyes. And I've had a couple afterwards that have been sort of interesting as well. But I think every time you experience a moment like that, you think about what, you know, what you're keeping from the world. And so I have a mission now to help a million people find their voice. And that's why it all sort of ties back to podcasting, because I give people platforms. I tell my story. I share my voice, of course. But because I'm so gung-ho on the platform, I really feel it's a great opportunity. And I know you can speak to it as well. Just like people have stories to tell. You know this better than I do. If you go into a bar, there's 50 people in the bar, there's 50 stories there. You just have to know, you just have to ask the right questions, and you have to take a genuine interest in people and just listen with intention.
Yeah, I agree. Holy cow, I had no idea you had that accident.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think you're just a kind of like, you know, when it happens, you're just like, oh, that's, you're just kind of happy to move on from her. And then just looking back, and sometimes, you need help of people who can help you like pull out these stories. And I was like, oh yeah, this happened. And then I think about like, oh, like how everything led to me like making those decisions, you know? And because if you think about the through line, I was like, oh, doing what my father said, doing what this guy said to start this website, doing what my half brother said, doing what my boss said. And now that I'm an entrepreneur, I'm like, no, I got to like find my own voice. I got to do my own thing. I can't ride people's coattails to get to where I want to go.
Yeah, but this is interesting. Now, do you think that's because your parents didn't encourage you or steer you the right way or nurture your talent when you were younger?
No, I think they knew what they knew in terms of like the American dream, and it's the 9 to 5. It's the safe job. It's the job with the benefits. It's, you know, and so those were the conversations that I was most nervous about every time I made that leap into something like, oh, I'm going to like move to Atlanta. And they're like, what? And like, oh, I'm going to leave to start this company. And they're like, what? You know, they're just like, they can't see. And, you know, thankfully I've been having success now. And then, you know, they're like, and you know how parents are. They're like, well, as long as you're happy, I'm happy. But in those early days,
and it's,
you know,
true, but yeah. You're saying it's not their fault. It's just, they didn't have the wherewithal or that kind of language to see the reality of the jobs that we landed in, because exactly. It didn't exist.
No, exactly. You know, you tell a kid, you know, and I'm sure if someone asked you early on, like, what do you want to be? You're like, oh, you know, fireman, policeman, nurse,
or actor. I always said an actress. And my mother was like, no, honey, you're not going to be an actress. You're going to go to Duquesne University, where your brothers and sisters went, because your father works there. And then you're going to find, you know, marry somebody. You'll settle down. You're going to have babies. That's what you do. I don't you know, and that's okay. And somebody has to keep the faith back home. But I'm just saying, like, it wasn't for me, but she didn't have that language. Now, what I'm wondering is, like, my daughter, because I feel like she found her voice at about 9, you know, and she's 14 now. Like, she's so fortunate. But what else will she complain about? I mean, I'm sure I'll have done something to mess her up. I ask her frequently. I say, Alabama, how's your childhood going?
That's a great
question.
What
am I doing wrong? Tell me.
Well, I mean, I think it's happened. It has happened. There's some sort of awakening, because there's a younger generation that I think is just really, really like alert and clear about what they want and what they don't want and what they're going to put up with and not put up with. I studied acting too when I was younger. I thought that was going to, I went on auditions, got headshots and all that. That was funny.
Well, you don't really have the language to think that there's other forms of entertainment. You don't think that, you know, when you're especially coming from Pittsburgh or even outside of LA, you know, you think that like, oh, who's in a movie? Well, there's a director and an actor. Like, you don't even think about the different departments. You don't think about special effects or, and so there's just a lot of language in the community of entertainment that we don't even have. Like, if you would say, I want to work on Broadway, that doesn't mean you want to be an actor or an actress. You could be a set designer or a seamstress or a, you know, a what do they call it? A drawer. What do you call it? what is that?
Illustrator.
The illustrator. Yeah, I'm just saying there's so many different careers. But yeah, if you don't grow up with it, how do you know?
Yeah, I think I feel like people can experiment and try a bunch of different things faster now.
Yeah, I think so too, especially with the internet and all that. So it's all for one. It's all for one. That's what it is. Everybody do their thing. Everybody go.
Yes.
I was laughing when you said Texas Instruments. I remember so well getting the Texas Instruments. Not me, my sister, my older sister. She got a Texas Instruments calculator.
Yeah.
And if you wrote in, I forget, it was like a 4ELL, then upside down it said hell. And it was like, what? This thing is crazy because it swears.
That's so funny. And pagers. Who can forget pagers and beepers?
Oh my gosh, when I was a flight attendant, I had a beeper for 7 years. I never had a real schedule. And if that beeper went off, then I had to find a payphone within 15 minutes, call scheduling, and you're going to the airport, you know? And it was just sucked. I still have flight attendant nightmares, which I know is an anxiety thing. I know it is. Do you ever have like waitressing or waitering nightmares?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, there's been some flashbacks of being in the weeds, which is funny.
No, it's true, right? I remember getting up at night and just like moving things around from my dresser to the bed, just like moving objects. I think I was waiting tables in my sleep.
That's funny.
It is funny. Well, listen, this has been so much fun to talk to you. I really appreciate, this is like very, it's very honest, you know, finding your voice. It's, yeah. It's really exposing, like, look at all that I did. But you know, at the end of the day, there's a reason for everything. And you had those experiences. And maybe if you hadn't gone to Thailand, you wouldn't have been in, you know, the accident and that accident. You know, it's just like my Peace Corps story. You know, I was in the Peace Corps when I found out I had cancer. And so that ended the Peace Corps career.
Yeah.
And made me realize, wait a second, what do I really want to do? I'd like to be an actress, remember? Mm-hmm. So let's go to LA, you know. Yeah. So it took me that long. My first one-woman show, it was called The Big Picture, which wasn't very good. But the tagline was, from Pitt to Los Angeles via the Kingdom of Tonga. And there was like an airplane going around the world. It took me, I was more afraid of coming to Los Angeles than a third world country.
Hmm.
And rightly so.
That's funny.
But the point is, you know, sometimes you do just have to take these crazy paths. I just, God, I hope my daughter, I get so, you know, I've done so many dumb things. And I just hope she doesn't do so many dumb things. I know she has to have experiences. But I hope they're not, you know, climbing cliffs in the South Pacific, like you said, where you're not going to get a chopper to you for 4 or 5 hours because it's going to take 3 hours to get to the dock, to get to the boat, to get to the mainland, to get the phone, to call the chopper. I mean, it just goes on
when
and
I
on.
When I was on that ferry from Suratani to Koh Samui, like, it was an hour-long ferry in Thailand, and I was like, if this ferry sinks, like, nobody in the world knows where I am. Like, nobody knows. Like, literally, I would be like, I would have just disappeared off the, like, nobody would, because I didn't have an iPhone there. Like, I wasn't going to call anyone. It's weird.
No, but it's interesting, though. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to post it. Nobody would be able to track your posts. You know, oh, there's Harry on the beach in Koh Samui and his Speedo again. Yeah, oh,
yeah,
Harry.
Yeah.
Did you get a massage on the beach in Koh Samui?
No, they came to the house and they gave us, like,
nice.
With, like, Tiger Balm. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
Did you happen to go to a snake show or a monkey show while you were there?
Went to a rave.
Oh, did you really? In Koh Samui on the beach?
Yeah, on the beach.
Were people taking drugs and stuff?
They may have been, yes.
You weren't, right?
No, not at that time. Or I may have.
No, that's
well.
Another.
I know,
but that's another thing that's not safe, to take drugs overseas. I mean,
no, definitely
it's one
not.
Thing if you're in Amsterdam in a coffee shop, but if you're like, again, way off the map in Koh Samui,
not
you
the
don't
place
need to
experiment with that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just drank like Singha and
Singha,
had fun.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Kapkunka.
Fond memories riding the tuk-tuks.
Oh, yeah. The tuk-tuks. Yeah. And the tuk-tuks, and you get in a tuk-tuk, which is like a three-wheeled vehicle. The guy won't take you where you want to go. First, he will stop at 3 jewelry stores first to try to get you to buy jewelry.
Oh, that's funny.
Because he has a deal with the shop owner.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It happens to everybody. It's a whole tuk-tuk scam.
I'm surprised you haven't had someone come on and tell a story about that.
Yeah, I could tell a story about that. Did you go to the Pat Pong district in Bangkok?
No, I didn't spend that much time in Bangkok. I think I was only there one night. I was looking for a club, but that never happened. Most of the time I was on Koh Samui.
Yeah. Oh, what a lovely place. Did you see one more thing, like some of the rocks that are in shapes, right? They're like grandmother rock and grandfather rock.
I did see the temples in Bangkok. That's why I went to Bangkok, because I went there and I paid a guy to basically be my taxi driver for the whole day. And then he took me to the airport like right after. So he took me to all the places, took some pictures, like he waited outside and then he finally
took me. No, it's super smart. Yeah. No, it's smart to do in a foreign city is get a driver for the day. It's a great idea because they're not going to screw you over because they know the money's coming after the ride.
Yes. Yes, you know? Yes, yes.
By the way, when you got into the temple, when you went to the temple, did you have to have on, you can't wear shorts,
you can't wear shorts.
Exposed shoulders.
Nope. You have to have a shirt on and
long pants.
Long pants.
Closed-toed shoes, even though you'd kick them off in a minute. Yep. Interesting, right?
Fascinating. Yeah, it was the first time I went somewhere and I felt like I was like on another planet. Because, you know, if I speak Spanish, so if I go to, I've been to France, I've been to Italy, and there's a romance language, you know, connection there. Brazil, love Brazil. But, you know, you land in like Thailand, you're just like, the colors are crazy. Everything's so bright and so exotic. The flavors, the language sounds like nothing you've ever heard before. Like you can't even make out one word.
Yeah, and you don't recognize anything because it's not the Latin language.
No.
And it's crazy. And then the translations are crazy. You know, like especially in Thailand and Bangkok, I remember a lot of, you know, stands that are selling like curry, but also on that list is like brains and feet and snout, and it's just you know, you got to pay attention, but it's a blast, right?
It was fun. Yeah.
Oh,
memories of last lifetime.
Yeah, I have a friend who went to Thailand and he's still there. It's been almost 5 years. He doesn't have, well, now he lives over there basically. He's found this really hot girlfriend, and you know, he's just like, why would I come back to that, you know? I totally don't blame them. Anyway, this has been so much fun. I think I'll have to find a Thai podcast this week. And let's see what's going on in Koh Samui this week.
Or you have a craving for Thai food now.
Yeah, right? Actually, I just said that to my boyfriend earlier. Let's get Thai food tonight. That's funny. It all comes around, Harry. There's a reason for everything.
Yes. Well, thanks, Christina. I really enjoyed this opportunity to tell that story. And honestly, any opportunity to just connect and
I know.
And hang
I love
out.
Hanging with you. It's fun, huh?
It's been no conferences, so sometimes we have to make the most. We've talked about this on my show. Like that moment when that hour that we get with our guests, it's really like treasured because it's, you know, it's probably more time than we would get if we were in the podcast, because in the hallway you'd be like, hey Christina, like, oh, I'm running somewhere, and you get like 5 minutes or 10 minutes. But just to have this like dedicated focused time with someone, it's rare nowadays, especially with all the distractions. So I definitely treasure and appreciate
it. It's nice and it's focused as well. So keep on keeping on what you're doing over there at Podcast Junkies, because it's very valuable. It really is.
Thank you.
And I know you're coming on to my podcast class to speak to my students. They're going to love you. You did it last time, but you didn't get paid. This time you're going to get paid, swear to God. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. Thank you so much again for tuning in. Don't forget to find out all story-worthy related things at storyworthypodcast.com. And then don't forget to come over to storysmashshow.com and see the pictures from the show. And come to the live show every Friday night at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Right now, there's no tickets. It's totally free. When the pandemic ends, we're going back to the improv for sure. So catch the show now while you can. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Harry Duran. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save Big Money.